I'm here tonight to talk about the issue of research into what may be the greatest medical breakthrough in our or any lifetime. The use of embryonic stem cells, cells created using the material of our own bodies, to cure a wide range of fatal and debilitating illnesses.
That was Ron Reagan, of course. He was talking about embryonic stem cell research at a recent Democratic National Convention in Boston. The subject of his speech was embryonic stem cell research. We're going to be talking about stem cell research, adult stem cell research, embryonic stem cell research during this hour of Issues, etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. What about this debate? I imagine that for some people, the very first and maybe the very most they have ever heard about stem cell research came from Ron Reagan in that recent speech at the Democratic National Convention. Do we fully understand the moral logic of this debate? We're going to be talking about that tonight with Greg Kokel from Stand to Reason. Greg Kokel is a regular guest here on the program. He is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and co-author of the book Relativism: Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. Greg, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Well, thanks for having me back, Todd.
Greg, did Ron Reagan paint an accurate picture of embryonic stem cell research that night in Boston?
Well, it kind of depends what you mean. It's possible to say a lot of true things, but not say everything that needs to be said to give an accurate picture, and therefore you can't be accused of lying, but you can be accused of misleading. Actually, I listened to that speech very carefully. I watched it live. I have a copy of it in front of me. I've read it over a couple of times, and I think actually Ron Reagan not only misled, but he also lied on a number of different points. That is, he knew to be false some of the things that he said, and he said them anyway for effect and impact, because he really wants embryonic stem cell research to go forward. Now, it seems to me if a person is deeply committed to something and wants to persuade people of that, and is of a charitable mind and right-intentioned about it, he's going to speak in unambiguous terms, and he's going to call things what they are instead of couching one thing in terms of another. In other words, one thing that may be deeply offensive to the population, but instead of saying that, you use other terminology to cover your tracks, as it were, and to obscure what you are really talking about. And what Ron Reagan was really talking about was cloning, human cloning. And he did a very good job of describing human cloning. He just never used the dreaded C word, because, of course, he knows that people are generally against cloning, and so he described the procedure, characterized it as something else, twisted and misled, ultimately, with his statements. And to me, this is more than sophistry, it's demagoguery. And it made me furious as I watched his manipulation and hucksterism on TV as he used the plight of so many different people, the terrible plight of people with disease, as a kind of fulcrum to get the rest of the population on board with him on this issue of embryonic stem cell research. You've probably done some web searching yourself, Todd, and I know your listeners have, on this issue, and there has been an avalanche of articles that has come out against Ron Reagan's speech from the scientific community and the pundit community because of the misleading statements that were made and because of the sophistry that was characteristic of that speech.
So clear it up for us. Give us the speech, in short, that Ron Reagan should have given if he were being truthful about embryonic stem cell research, adult stem cell research, and, as you mentioned, if he were going to be truthful and upfront about the role of human cloning in embryonic stem cell research.
Well, he had a very nice introduction, and he came out to talk about the great possibilities of the future, but what he should have said with regards to embryonic stem cell research is that we are at the beginning of the learning curve, as it were, and we don't know what the future holds here. It's taken us a long time to get to this place. It was 1981, I think, when the first mice cells, embryonic stem cells, were isolated for use. It took 20 years to get to use them in any productive fashion. There were drawbacks on it. Now we're starting with human embryonic stem cells, and the fact is that all human embryonic stem cells come from human embryos. Now, I'd think that would go without saying, but he didn't make that clear. He would have gone on to say that the procedure that he described, taking some cells from the skin, I don't know if you have this quote queued up or not, but what he says is, imagine going to a doctor who, instead of prescribing drugs, takes a few skin cells from your arm. The nucleus of one of your cells is placed into a donor egg whose own nucleus has been removed. A bit of chemical and electrical stimulation will encourage your cell's nucleus to begin dividing, creating new cells, which will then be placed in a tissue culture. Stem cells containing your own DNA, and on he goes. And, of course, what he doesn't tell you that he ought to have is that this is normally called, by scientists, somatic cell nuclear transfer, SCNT, or in plain terms, therapeutic cloning, or human cloning for therapeutic purposes. He would also have said, if he was going to be completely honest, that yes, it is true that no human embryos are involved. I'm sorry, no human fetuses are involved, because the embryo is not allowed to develop to the level of a fetus. It is carved up for its body parts before it gets to fetus and then later to a child. He doesn't tell them what he could have told them, that this cloned human being made from your own DNA would, in fact, given the right environment, develop into a fetus and then could be born as a child. This is the same type of human individual that each one of us started as, except for in this case, since they're kept in a petri dish, they'll never go much further, partly because it's awful hard to grow a baby in a petri dish. And then, of course, all of the promises that he implied would be fulfilled by the use of this research. Of course, he has no grounds upon which to suggest such things. There is no evidence whatsoever that Alzheimer's disease in particular, which, by the way, he did not bring up at that speech, but he has at other times, can benefit from any kind of stem cell research, because Alzheimer's is a multifaceted disease, and it isn't just one thing that goes wrong. He also failed to mention that there are other types of stem cell research, adult stem cell research, that do take the stem cells from adults without destroying the human being in the process, that actually not only have promise in the future, but are showing promise right now in actual laboratory testing, and are not freighted with the kind of ethical problems that we see with embryonic stem cell research. Now, he could have said all of those things, but if you had said all of those things at the DNC, people would have realized, first of all, that he was promoting human cloning, which most people are very wary of, and that wouldn't have looked good. He would have also had to say that there is another means that's less expensive and less ethically freighted that is already producing good results, and therefore none of these things would have served his purposes or the party's purpose very well. And so basically, he sold the world a bill of goods. The American people in general, and he is the one that ought to be ashamed of that.
Greg, you say that to a degree, neither side of this debate about stem cell research really understands the moral logic of its views. Now, I'd like to know what you mean by that, but in order to introduce that, let's listen again to Ron Reagan. Here he talks about making a distinction.
It is a hallmark of human intelligence that we are able to make distinctions. Yes, these cells could theoretically have the potential, under very different circumstances, to develop into human beings. That potential is where their magic lies. But they are not, in and of themselves, human beings. They have no fingers and toes, no brain or spinal cord. They have no thoughts, no fears. They feel no pain. Surely, we can distinguish between these undifferentiated cells multiplying in a tissue culture and a living, breathing person, a parent, a spouse, a child.
Now, Greg, you have said that neither side really understands the moral logic of their positions. picking up on what Ron Reagan had to say there, what do you mean by that? You've got 1 minute before we go to this
break. Okay, well, maybe we can return to this because I have a lot to say. I'd like to say about that quote in itself. But the what's confusing to me is the actions of both the pro-choicers and the pro-lifers on this issue, particularly the pro-lifers that defend ESCR, but at the same embryonic stem cell research, but at the same time are pro-life with regards to other aspects of this debate. The pro-choicers, it seems to me, instead of trying to defend ESCR on the merits, should just say, look, we can kill this baby at any point of development. Why not kill it, legalized abortion, why not kill it early and benefit from it? So there's no need for extra debate here on this issue, it seems to me, as long as abortion is legal. So they're showing their hand about an uncomfort, discomfort that they have here on this issue right there. And then secondly, with regards to the pro-lifers, the only way that a pro-lifer can defend ESCR is to adopt pro-choice arguments. But these same pro-choice arguments, that is, the embryo's not in the right place, it's in a petri dish, it will never grow to be an adult, yes, because you're going to kill it first, and things like that, are the same arguments pro-choicers offer against in favor of abortion in general. So I don't know how pro-lifers can talk out of both sides of their mouth on this issue, and I don't know why pro-choicers feel they need to defend ESCR with all these other reasons when abortion is legal through the entire 9 months of pregnancy, even to partial birth abortion.
We'll talk more about that. That is crucial. Understanding the moral logic in the debate on embryonic stem cell research. Greg Kokel is our guest. He's founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. When we come back, we're going to boil it down to the one question. The one question. It's what is it? What are we dealing with when we talk about the embryo in embryonic stem cell research? Greg Kokel is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be right back after this.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We're talking about stem cell research with Greg Kokel here on Issues Etc. this evening. You can check out the website for Stand to Reason. Greg is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. First, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the section titled Links with Regular Guests of the website, you'll find a direct link to Greg Kokel and Stand to Reason. Or, if you'd like to know how to receive their free Solid Ground newsletter, call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, and we'll give you the phone number and the mailing address for Stand to Reason, 1-800-737-0172. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss prayer with Dr. Andrew Steinman. He's author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for August, Is God Listening? Does prayer bring God to me? Is prayer a pipeline of communication between the believer and God, and is that pipeline a two-way street? Does God decide how to answer prayers based on how many people are praying? We'll talk about that next week on Issues Etc. with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the rest of August and into the month of September, check out our website, issuesetc.org. Greg, before the break, you were talking about the failure on both sides of the debate to see the moral logic in the stem cell research debate. What is the one question that both sides, those who are either against embryonic stem cell research or for embryonic stem cell research, ultimately have to contend with, ultimately have to answer?
Well, let me introduce it with an illustration that I think really drives the point home. If Todd, if you were sitting at home, say, working on your computer, and one of your children came up behind you and said, Daddy, can I kill this? Now, you can't see what they're doing or what they have. What's the question you have to ask before you can answer their question?
What is it?
What is it? And that teaches a very simple lesson. Before you can kill any living thing, the first thing you have to do is to know what kind of thing that is before you know whether it's right or not to kill it. Now, I've said with regards to the abortion issue, and this, I think, principle applies to this discussion, that if the unborn is not a human being, then no justification for either abortion or embryonic stem cell research seems to be necessary. Go ahead and do anything you want with it if it's not a human being. But if the embryo turns out to be, the unborn turns out to be a human being, then no justification for either embryonic stem cell research or abortion seems to be justified. And that's why this moral logic, we decide what it is. If it is a human being, we don't take the lives of innocent human beings for the kinds of reasons people are doing these things, having abortions or doing research. And if the unborn is not a human being, well, then we approve of both. And if the one is approved, the abortion issue is resolved, then that also resolves the ESCR issue. If, however, we through our moral thinking and reasoning, we've come to conclude that it's wrong to kill any human being without proper justification, well, then it's not right to abort children for the reasons people have abortions, but for the same reasons, and this is where the consistency on the pro-life side should come forth, it's not right to carve up the same human being at its earliest stage of development to get its cells to use for research. This is just as barbaric, Todd. That's the basic logic there. Now, what you need to argue then is that the unborn is not a human being, and in fact, the quote that we listened to from Ronald Reagan asserted as much. But here he was very deceptive in his language. He says, for example, yes, these cells could theoretically have the potential under very different circumstances to develop into human beings. Well, this is false. The correct way of stating it is, yes, these cells do have the actual potential to develop into adult human beings. That is, they're already embryonic human beings, and they have the actual, not the theoretic, potential to continue growing to the next stage, which would be fetus, child, adolescent, and adult. That's misleading. He seems to suggest to people, you don't have to worry about killing an human being in this particular case. We're not dealing with a human being, but in fact we are. Keep in mind, by the way, Todd, what we're talking about here is not an individual stem cell that is a human being, but rather the place where one gets the stem cells from. On the description that Ron gave, which is a description of cloning, first a human embryo is created and then destroyed to produce these to take those stem cells and use them for research. And it is that human embryo, those cells in aggregate before being carved up, that have the actual potential to develop into actual human beings. And so when he says they, and I'm quoting now, they are not in and of themselves human beings, well, he strictly speaking, the cell isn't, but he destroyed a human being, the embryo, to get the embryonic stem cells. And then he goes on to describe this, you know, human beings have fingers, toes, brain, spinal cord, thoughts, fears, pain, that kind of thing, which the human embryos do not have, and therefore they're somehow disqualified from being really human beings. The fact that they're human beings from the moment conception is a scientific reality that Mr. Reagan could have discovered if he would simply read the most basic book in embryology. This isn't somebody's theology. This is science. The ethical question comes in with what do we do with human beings that have a benefit to us if we kill them first? And I think the standard answer has to be, the answer of civilization, is that we don't do that. We don't kill people, human beings, for simply the benefit it can bring to us. I think he's right, as the quote says, that we have as human beings, we have the intelligence to make distinctions, and that we have to make these kinds of distinctions. Unfortunately, he has not helped us in making distinctions. He's just obfuscated the issue by giving us half-truths and distortions to make his case look just when it isn't.
With a minute and a half before we go to another break here, Greg, what gives the human being, regardless of size, level of development, or location, what gives a human being its worth, his value?
Well, that's a very important question, and I'm prepared to give an answer for that as a Christian. And the question really is a grounding question. If it is the case that human beings have value, where does that value come from? Now, I think it's when you reflect on human value for a few moments, Todd, you realize that the human value that we all seem to know that we have is not grounded in anything physical, the kind of physical things that Mr. Reagan described there, because people, there are human beings with value with no fingers and toes, that have severe problems with their brains and their thoughts and their feelings, etc. You know, human beings are not valuable in terms of some functional thing, because if that were the case, then some human beings would be more valuable than others, those that function better. No, when we reflect on the idea of equal human rights and the fact that there is nothing equal about any human being in a physical sense except for his human nature, his bare humanness, we realize that there's something about innate about human beings themselves that make them innately valuable, not anything functional or physical as Mr. Reagan described here. And Christianity offers an explanation for that, that human beings uniquely bear the mark of God in their invisible selves. They were made in the image of God. And that doesn't matter then what their physical bodies happen to look like, whether their size, level of development, degree of dependency, or environment. These are things that are not factored in. Humans qua humans, that is, as human beings. All you have to do is be a human to have the value that all human beings have.
Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about stem cell research. You can read several articles on the subject of stem cell research on our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section of the website. You'll find these resources, including one written by our guest, Greg Kokel, issuesetc.org. When we come back, our conversation with Greg continues on stem cell research. He's founder of Stand to Reason and co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. Why do Lutherans believe as they do about baptism, confession and absolution, the Lord's Supper? Why do Lutherans insist that Christian preaching be the preaching of law and gospel? Why do Lutherans worship the way they do? You'll find answers to these questions in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Why I Am a Lutheran, Jesus at the Center by Pastor Daniel Preuss. The book Why I Am a Lutheran costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. You can order it from Concordia Publishing House by calling them weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Why I Am a Lutheran, Jesus at the Center by Pastor Daniel Preuss, 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
And should we fail, how will we feel if a few years from now, a more enlightened generation should fulfill the promise of embryonic stem cell therapy? Imagine what they would say of us who lacked the will.
That, again, was Ron Reagan in his speech about embryonic stem cell research at the recent Democratic National Convention in Boston. Stem cell research is the subject of our conversation with Greg Kokel. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss prayer with Dr. Andrew Steinman. He's author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for August, Is God Listening? Does prayer bring God to me? Is prayer a pipeline of communication between the believer and God? And is that pipeline a two-way street? Does God decide how to answer prayers based on how many people are praying? We'll talk about that next week on Issues Etc. with Dr. Andrew Steinman. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing for the rest of August and into the month of September, check out our website, issuesetc.org. While you're there at the website, be sure to find out more about our Issues Etc. book of the month for August, Is God Listening? issuesetc.org. Or you can find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Is God Listening? Is Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August. Greg, the thing about stem cell research that I find most people are really confused about, or confused by, is, and you've mentioned this before, the intentional and sometimes unintentional blurring of terms, definitions, descriptions. Ron Reagan is a good example of that. Things are blurred, things are omitted, steps in the process that are crucial, like where did you get the stem cells from in the first place, are omitted, and people walk away thinking, look, I'm no doctor, and I trust this person who seems to know what they're talking about. They don't seem to have a problem with it. Why should I have a problem with it?
Mm-hmm.
And do I have to have an MD in order to have an opinion on embryonic stem cell research?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have an MD, and I don't think you have to have that in order to make an educated opinion. It is unfortunate that we have, and I use this word advisedly, but demagogic characters like Mr. Reagan, who will willfully distort the ideas and the facts for people. But let the buyer beware, you know, el caveat emptor. We have to be careful about what we hear and assessing it. This is true in anything, whether it's certainly it's true in political speeches, but even in your own church, you know. You have to listen carefully, and it's not enough to just hear what the person says. You have to think about the reasons that person has given you to believe his point of view. And sometimes that's more difficult, especially when you have a demagoguery that's going on. You have a sleight of hand that's kind of happening for the purpose of deceiving. And this is why, if you're not as skilled as that, one of the best things that you can do is get some peer review of a person's point of view. In other words, find out what other people who are equal in a position to know whether the facts he's offered are true, what they have to say about his speech. And this is why the Internet is so great, because you can go on the World Wide Web and you can peruse it and find places where there is a very intelligent response to these kinds of things. Or talk radio is an example right here. So I'm able to give to your viewers, through your listeners, some of the information that's being left out. But you always have to be careful. You always have to look closely. And this is why, I mean, I try to be very responsible in the things that I argue in favor of, in the sense that I am going forward and being as clear and unambiguous and non-manipulative as possible, and giving you the full reasons why I believe what I do, and then even give some arguments against why I believe what I do, do my own peer review, and then answer those. When you see that kind of thing, it's much, you can trust, I think you're in a better position to trust what a person has to say. But by and large, it's very important for you to, for everybody to be very careful about these kinds of things. I'll give you one example from the clip that you just shared. And these are the things that stand out for me, because I know how to manipulate people with words. And should we fail, how will we feel if a more enlightened generation should fulfill the promise? Imagine what they would say of us who lacked the will. First, there's an appeal to feelings, which isn't totally illegitimate, but he implies that if we fail, it's because we are unenlightened and we lack the will. But, of course, that's not what's at stake here. Those that oppose Mr. Reagan have very carefully developed principled arguments against his view. We aren't unenlightened. Robert George of Yale University, for goodness sake, is not unenlightened. He's one of the best ethical thinkers in the world. And it might be that he is wrong on his view, arguing against embryonic stem cell research, but he's not unenlightened, and it certainly isn't the case that any of us lack the will to move forward on this. So ironic that he would say this, because this was the administration who opposes ESCR, that had the will to go into Iraq, for goodness sake, yet he charges us with lacking the will. That's what I mean by manipulation and demagoguery.
So speak to the listener who has run across an MD, or perhaps someone who's got a bioethics degree, who says, look, it's undeniable, from the moment of conception, we have a human being on our hands. Even the results of human cloning, we've got a human being on our hands.
That's science. That's quantifiable science.
Okay. They will grant that. They've got the MD, and they can say that with all authority. Mm-hmm. Genetically, biologically, it's a human being, but it's not a person. There's a difference. They will make that distinction. Answer that.
Well, if they do make that distinction, it is their job to draw a clear line between a human being and a human person. And my question is always, in a circumstance like that, what is the difference? Now, this is a question they have got to answer. And the reason they have to answer it is, and think about what's at stake here. They have just declared to us that there are two classes of human beings. Those human beings that are not persons and those human beings that are persons. Human beings that are not persons can be killed with impunity. Human beings that are persons have the full protection of the law. Now, if there are human beings I can kill with impunity, and other human beings that if I kill, I'll be killed, at least in some states, we better have a very clear idea where that dividing line is. And the fact is, Todd, the qualifications that people have given in the past for the difference between a human person and a human non-person are fraught with all kinds of difficulties. First of all, they seem quite arbitrary. You know, why'd you make this qualification rather than this qualification? They relate to size or level of development or degree of dependency or even location in the case of abortion, you know, in the womb or out of the womb. So, I mean, and the question is, why should any of those things disqualify a bona fide human being from being a protected member of the human community? What, do smaller human beings get less protection? Are human beings that are more dependent on other human beings, do they get less protection? Are they less than human? Usually it's the other way around. If we see somebody who's smaller, more vulnerable, and handicapped, then these are the ones we feel the responsibility to protect more because they are defenseless. Yet it's topsy-turvy in this discussion.
There is a, since we're talking about stem cell research, we would be remiss if we didn't point out, Greg, that there is a source of stem cells that does not carry and does not have the moral dilemma attached to it. Tell us about
that. That's right. That came up earlier in our conversation, and this is the whole field of adult stem cell research. And a lot of work has been done on this. There has been tremendous promise that this has shown, and this is where your body doesn't produce stem cells only in the earliest stages. It does do that. In fact, in the earliest stages, from the time of conception until a couple of days or maybe a week afterwards, you have nothing but stem cells. And these are the embryonic stem cells. That is, you have a full human being in the embryo stage completely made up of stem cells. And that's why we call them embryonic stem cells. And this is the subject of the conversation that Mr. Reagan offered us, the subject of his speech. And, of course, you have to destroy the embryo in order to get those embryonic stem cells. But human adults also produce stem cells. They are not embryonic stem cells. They are adult stem cells. They come from human beings at a different stage of development and can be extracted from the adult human being in a way that does not harm the human being, and also with the consent of the human being. And those have shown tremendous capabilities and benefits. I don't have all the facts and figures in front of me, but suffice it to say that this holds a lot of promise. And as you pointed out, this is not freighted with the ethical problems that we have with embryonic stem cell research. So why not pour our money into that rather than into this highly speculative area? By the way, just a point of information, why is it that they want to get so much money from the government in order to fund embryonic stem cell research, which requires human cloning to accomplish that? And I'll tell you the reason, because the private sector is not stepping up to the plate. Now, why would the private sector not step up to the plate if this technology has so much incredible promise? The reason that people invest in pharmaceuticals is because these things have tremendous promise to make a buck, and so they invest in it. But the private sector is not bellying up to the bar here. Why not? They don't have any confidence in this. The free market ought to tell us something. If the government has to get involved with funding it, it's probably not a good idea.
Greg Kokel is our guest. He's founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's co-authored the book Relativism, Firmly Planted in Midair. We're talking about stem cell research. When we come back from this break, our last 10 minutes here with Greg, the moral logic of the pro-life position. Many people understand it quite well when it comes to the abortion issue. As we started out our conversation, so we will end our conversation. Does that moral logic, if consistently held, also answer the questions raised by embryonic stem cell research? And then a practical question. Okay, we've got all these embryos frozen in vitro fertilization clinics around the world. If not for research, what should we do with them? You pro-lifers, you wouldn't want us to throw them away, would you? Let's use them for something good. Or, and they're talking about research, of course, or is there another alternative? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stem cell research isn't an easy question because it's not easily understood. But the moral logic that answers the moral questions raised by embryonic stem cell research, who are we dealing with? Who are we proposing to do research upon? The moral logic of the pro-life position answers that question and answers it definitively and answers it in such a way so that it is crystal clear. We're dealing with a fellow human being and research is out of the question. We'll be right back with Greg Kokel.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you'd like to know how to contact our guest in this hour, Greg Kokel, and Stand to Reason, or if you'd like to become our Issues Etc. lay representative in your local Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation, or if you'd like to help us defend life from beginning to end, as we're doing during this hour, by making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc., call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Or write us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. That's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about stem cell research. Greg, if we weren't talking about embryos that are so microscopic you can't see them except with a microscope, if we weren't talking about something that was hidden deep within the womb of a woman or hidden off in a lab someplace in a petri dish, if we were talking about human beings saying, look, they have this valuable store of cells inside their body, and all we got to do is crack them open. It'll kill them, but we got to crack them open and get those cells out, and we can cure diseases. Wouldn't it be clear to everybody?
Yeah, I want to take exception with the way you asked the question, and I think you probably did this on purpose, but when you said, but if we were talking about human beings, and I think what you meant there is if we were talking about adult human beings, we could see as clearly and obviously human being as opposed to those younger human beings that we can't see. Well, the answer is, of course, I hope the answer would be that no, we wouldn't do this. And I think for a person who says that, it shows that they are in touch with what I call the moral logic of the pro-life position, or at least the moral aspect of it. And the moral logic goes something like this. It's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being. And I think that's evident from the illustration that you just offered. When it's clear in our mind that we have a human being in view here, whether it's a child or an adolescent or an adult, we realize that the things that are done in embryonic stem cell research would not be morally legitimate in that case because of this moral premise, that it's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being. But then the second premise of the moral logic of the pro-life view is that abortion or embryonic stem cell research, fill in the blank there, does take the life of an innocent human being. Therefore, embryonic stem cell research and abortion would be wrong. Now, that's a syllogism. That is, it's an argument. It is a very tight argument. The argument is valid. That means the conclusion follows from the premises if the premises are true. And I think it's pretty clear that the premises are true. Therefore, this means that the argument's sound. It is true that it's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being, and it doesn't matter at what stage of that human being's life you actually take it. And it certainly is the case that ESCR and abortion do that, and therefore that would make it wrong. This is not a case, by the way, as Ron Reagan put it, of political axe grinding. which is, I thought, terribly disingenuous when he said that, because it is a matter, it is not a matter of personal mere theological belief or mere ideology, as he also said. These are very principled theological arguments, I'm sorry, principled philosophical arguments about the nature of what it means to be human and what makes human beings valuable. And he brushed right over the top of that. And by the way, to show the lie of that statement, even so-called progressive countries like, and watch this, France, Norway, Australia, and Canada, hardly bastions of theologically motivated moralism, right? They've banned the kind of human cloning surreptitiously advocated by Ron Reagan on the floor of the DNC last week. They can see that this isn't right, and they're not driven by any Bible verses. And so for Mr. Reagan to simply assume, or I should say dismiss, the views of those like myself who think it's wrong to do embryonic stem cell research as mere ideology, mere theological belief, is, again, not only disingenuous, this is a lie. He knows better, and he's not telling the truth, because he's a demagogue when it comes to these kinds of things. He's an orator who appeals to the passions and prejudices of his audience. And he just wants to get his way. He's not interested in the truth.
Okay, someone's out there saying, look, I know a little something about this. I know that there is a source that doesn't require human cloning. There are a bunch of leftover embryos, human embryos, floating in tanks of liquid nitrogen. They're frozen out there. They are the byproducts or the leftovers from in vitro fertilization
right.
clinics, and they're out there by the hundreds, perhaps the thousands. So, look, why can't we get some good use out of them, because they're just going to be forgotten or thrown away? What do you propose we do with them, Greg?
Well, that is a less controversial, in one sense, proposition than the human cloning thing, which Ron Reagan essentially recommended last week. But it is no less problematic. In fact, many people thought he was going to go this route instead of the cloning route. But it's no less problematic, because whether you create the human being to destroy it, or you already have the human being for other reasons and then destroy it for these reasons, it's still a violation of our moral logic. It's wrong to take the life of an innocent human being for those reasons, regardless of how you happen to get the human being. My recommendation is simply this with regards to those embryos, most of which, by the way, are not even available for research, because these are the embryos of parents who want to have them implanted and give the children a chance. I think that's what we should do with the rest of them. If we are, if these are real human beings, which they are, we ought to follow our moral principles. And since embryos are valuable human beings, we should treat them like anyone else. They shouldn't be wantonly destroyed. They shouldn't be auctioned off for medical experimentation. They shouldn't be farmed out for their valuable body parts. But instead, they should be adopted, that is, implanted in new mothers, or allowed to die naturally, but not at our own hand. If they die in the process of thawing or whatever, then that's just the way it goes. But when we kill them, that's an entirely different situation. You know, my wife and I adopted embryos earlier this year. We're seeking to have children because we haven't been able to have our own, and this was one thing that we wanted to do. And we got 5 embryos. As it turned out, 2 of them died during thawing, and the other 3 that were implanted didn't make it, and we were deeply saddened. But at least we gave those 5 human beings a chance. And that's what ought to be done with this. And I think to avoid the problem in the future, in vitro fertilization should be done only with the number of eggs that can safely be carried by the mother, without risking so-called selective reductions, which is just another word for abortion. And so it's possible to do IVF, I think, in a moral fashion, but that doesn't mean leaving a bunch of embryos and a bunch of baby human beings, small human beings, over in the freezer that eventually are just simply discarded. We should give these kids a chance.
You have a minute and a half before we've got to wrap this up here, Greg. The moral logic of the pro-life position, if consistently held, it's been recognized for a long time, obviously applies to abortion. Does it equally apply to embryonic stem cell research?
It does equally apply for exactly the same reasons. Human beings have intrinsic value. Intrinsic value means that humans are valuable for the kind of beings they are, not for any physical quality that at some time or other they may express. They are individual human beings from the moment of conception, and they never change into anything else. They are not potential humans. They are humans. And all they do with the proper care and the proper environment is go through normal stages of development, self-directed by their own nature, from embryo to fetus to child to adolescent to adult. You have simply a change in looks and change eventually in location, change in development, but the individual being never changes. The human being is always a human being. It always is itself from the first moment it comes into being and never ceases to be itself until it dies at whatever stage that happens to be. This is very simple. It is very straightforward. It is not complicated. It should be very easy to understand. Unfortunately, we have forces out there that are willing to deny this obvious scientific fact and the moral implications of it in order to get something they want. And this is something that we must resist with everything we have, Todd.
Greg Kokel is founder of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. Greg, as always, thank you for being our guest on Issues Etc.
You're welcome, Todd. And our next Solid Ground, coming out September 1st, will be on this issue if people want to follow the route that you suggest to get in touch with Stand to Reason and get that Solid Ground.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Folks, would you like to receive a free tape of this discussion on stem cell research? Perhaps to share with someone who's confused or who's been making the kind of arguments we've been answering in this hour. All you've got to do is contact the local Lutheran church that sponsors Issues Etc. for you, and they'll send you a free cassette recording. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for your local Lutheran church sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. It comes down to this. We ask the question, what is it? Who is the unborn? Who is the embryo? Well, I've heard that question before. Who is my neighbor? For Christians who look out onto the world and see this promise of embryonic stem cell research, or at least the promise of a promise there, we cannot avoid that question. We cannot say, oh, the hope is so great and the promise is so profound that we can step aside from the question, who is my neighbor? No, we can't. We have to answer that question, and that question's already been answered. That embryo, that baby, is my neighbor and yours. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.